erectile dysfunction can occur in a 47-year-old, but it doesn't happen that rapidly. It can, but it's not common. Usually it's more of an insidious process that kind of sneaks up on you over time. I would ask you to look at your life, your stress levels. Something we don't talk a lot about is the effect that stress has on our erection. So we have this thing called a fight or flight response. And this is something you learn in like basic physiology. It's like we were designed so when the saber-toothed tiger is chasing you, what you do is it's not a good time to have an erection or to have babies or do unnecessary things like that or digest food. You want to shunt all your blood to your muscles, to your heart. Your heart starts racing. Your blood pressure goes up. Your objective is just to get away from the saber-toothed tiger. That's how we were designed. And, you know, fortunately in 2020, we don't have saber-toothed tigers anymore, but we still have stress. And stress does the same thing to you. And we kind of divert our blood flow from where we'd like it to be to where the body thinks it needs to be because it's under stress.
Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and on today's show, I'm joined by certified urologist Dr. Edward Cartman, and we are pertaining to all of your penile needs, taking calls and giving you the hard facts, hey, because most of us could use some penile focus. Topics include what may be causing your ED and what you can do about it. Okay, what the hell is a cock shocker and how does it improve your sexual functioning? A little insight on the foreskin debate and some of the most interesting things that have been requested in your urologist's office. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily. You got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's got to have her standards. Oh, my.
The women know about shrinkage.
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, please check out sexwithemily.com. We are updating that daily to give you guys blogs and posts and things that are going to help you with your sex and relationships. A lot of the questions you might be asking, maybe we've answered it there. And find us on all social media. It is Sex with Emily across the board. And Intentions with Emily. So each show, it helps us set an intention. I'm going to do the same. But think about this. Like, while you're listening, what would you like to learn? What would you like to glean from this episode? How could it help you? It could be, oh, Dr. Emily, I've been having some performance issues, and I'd like to know tips to get back into peak performance. Or maybe it's my partner's penis isn't always in full mast. What do I do? Help me. My intention is to give you all the penis knowledge that may just save you and help you in your bedroom activities. All right, enjoy the show.
And I'm so excited to welcome my guest. He's the man. Dr. Edward Cartman came in just to be here with us tonight. Board certified urologist. And he's also one of the few urologists who's a fellowship trained in male reproductive medicine and surgery. You're up in the Bay Area. You're very well versed in all things penis health. They can find you at eCartmanMD Instagram and healthy-mail.com. This will all be in our show notes as well at sexwithemily.com. So welcome, Dr. Cartman. I just want you all to say, they call in right now. We've got to get back to our friend Jake in Illinois about his open relationship, but then we're turning it over to your penises, either your penis or a penis in your life, anything going on, erectile dysfunction, challenges, erection, too hard, too soft. You want to last longer. You don't last long enough. You're worried about your penis size. Am I missing any major penis things? Penis size. Oh, you can talk. He's pointing to his friend. He just threw his friend on the bus. So Dr. Cartman brought in a friend. I'm like, bring him in. And he's like, his friend apparently is worried about his penis size. He doesn't talk. He's like, thanks, buddy. You guys like friends? Good friends?
We're good buddies. We met through the industry. We worked together for many years, and we've developed a relationship.
Okay. You can make fun of each other's penises.
He helped me with a penis reduction. It was something that was plaguing me for a very long time, and now I can function normally in society.
Good. It's a good man. It is true, though. Large penises are one of the biggest biggest problems that we hear from sexually, not just, not a small penis, but you don't know anything about that.
It's a curse.
I hear you, ma'am. Okay, let's just talk to Jake in Illinois, 23, in this open relationship, having some challenges. So, Jake, I'm just feeling it's not working for you guys right now.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm feeling too. Okay. And that's kind of what I wanted to ask you. Because we're on the apps. You've recommended Field and stuff, and we've tried that out. But it just seems like every time an opportunity presents itself, she kind of avoids it. She avoids conversation about sex in general, not just the open relationship.
Oh, okay. Well, sounds like she's got work to do too, Jake. She's 23 years old. Maybe she hasn't really explored her body yet and figured out what feels good. And it's probably confusing for her to be with you and then go out and have sex with someone else. You know, at 23, I probably would have canceled that plan as well. So she just might not be where you're at. And that's okay. You can still love her and take a break, you know, from each other and just, or break up because you're not in the same place. I think that's really brave. Okay, Jake, let me know how it goes. I'm here for you, buddy, every night. I got you. Dr. Cartman, hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So is there anything I need to know since we've talked last? Because otherwise we could jump into some penis questions, but you're going to stay and hang out for a bit.
Yeah, I'll be here. What's new in the world of sexual medicine? Well, one of the hottest things is shockwave therapy for the penis.
Tell me everything.
I call it the cock shocker. Just make it
simple. Of course. Right. I love it.
So there's this interesting thing we found out about 10 years ago that if you do very low energy shockwaves to a body part, you could actually stimulate stem cells to help it recover and to heal. And this is a therapy they've used for many years in different parts of the body. A lot of athletes do this to recover from sports injuries. And it's been very useful. And they finally said, well, let's try it out. You know, let's try it out on the penis, see if it works.
Yeah.
So about 10 years ago, the first paper came out, and what they did was they did this low-intensity shockwave therapy on the penis. And
where on the penis do you shock it?
We shock it all over. Mm. So we
I'm just wondering.
We focus on the external. So probably some of your listeners don't know this, but only 2/3 of your penis is outside your body. 1/3 of your penis is inside your body, and it's deep down in the pelvis. And so guys don't understand that. And so when we, I think we talked about penile size and how guys say their penises are small and they get smaller. And I tell them the best thing you could do to get a bigger penis is lose some weight.
Okay? Yeah. That's an incentive.
Yes.
That's the best incentive I've ever heard.
To lose
for
weight.
For many a man.
Yes.
To be like, oh, now I'm going to lose weight.
Absolutely.
My penis looks bigger. Okay.
So they found out that if you put these low energy waves in around the penis, onto the penis, and these treatments are really short. They like only take us about 10 minutes to perform. They're pain-free. It's non-invasive. It's really, there's no side effects.
Wow.
It's almost as, I mean, it's the closest thing that I could say that's like sprinkling magic fairy dust on your penis to make it better. Because everyone's looking for that, you know, holy grail.
Because usually they're taking Viagra if they have this problem or some pill, correct?
Right. And which has side effects.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Or it's an invasive procedure which requires surgery. And finally, something came along that it's non-invasive, really no side effects. And over time, it could actually improve your penile health. So, you know, the big thing now in medicine is regenerative medicine. We're trying to like have our bodies just heal themselves because we have these amazing abilities to heal ourselves. Like you cut yourself. Why do you heal in 2 months? Well, it's because you activate those stem cells locally, which then start repairing the injury.
Right.
Well, we don't want to go in and cutting guys' penises just so they could try to grow new blood vessels or get better. So this is a non-invasive way to kind of stimulate those stem cells that live in the penis.
That makes so much sense. Okay, so I want to hear more about this, but Amy's been holding for like an hour and she only has 6 more minutes. And she has a question for you. Sure. So we're going to go to Amy. Amy, 40 in Orange County. You have a question.
Hi, Dr. Emily.
Hi. Thanks for calling. I'm here with Dr. Cartman, and I just got the message from them
Hi.
So what's going on with your boyfriend? We want to help you. And then we're going to get back to the shock cock. What's it? Cock shocker. Cock shocker. Okay, yeah. Tell me everything.
He has trouble reaching orgasm when we have sex. And sometimes it just takes a really long time, and sometimes he just gives up and we can't at all. We just stop. And then sometimes we stop and then he'll just like finish himself up masturbating and then he can.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to know
what you can
what could be causing it and if I can do anything.
Okay, yeah. Great question. So it's just like delayed ejaculation is what it sounds to me. What do you say about delayed ejaculation when typically a man lasts longer than what, 30, 45 minutes?
So some guys with premature ejaculation, which is the most common problem, say are saying, why are you complaining?
Right.
But it is a problem. And my first question to you, Amy, is your boyfriend on any medications for depression?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He doesn't take any medications?
None at all.
Okay. Because the reason is that a lot of people take antidepressants like Prozac, Paxil, Lexapro, right. All these medications,
and
and they have a known side effect of delaying ejaculation. Yeah. We actually use them off-label to treat men who have premature ejaculation, which is the most common sexual problem that men have. But if that's not the case for your boyfriend and he doesn't do any drugs... Okay.
No, he drinks alcohol, but this happens if he drinks or if he doesn't.
Right, and he's probably, has he said this has been a thing that's always been an issue or a challenge for him?
I haven't really gone there to probe that. I don't know how long it's been going on, but we're both divorced, and he told me the reason he thinks that happens is because with his ex-wife, the whole time, their whole relationship, they never used birth control, and so he always had to pull out, and he thinks that he just like developed like a nervous thing from that, and now it's hard for him to get there because of that. So I don't know if that's the case or not, but that's what he attributes it to.
Huh. I mean, could be. Could be watching porn too. Like if he has like a tight grip around his penis when he's watching porn, that could be it too.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Does he watch porn? Do you guys watch porn together or does he watch porn alone?
We don't watch it together, and not that I know of that he does, but from what you're saying, the tight grip, like when he does do it, he seems to like have a really loose grip when he does it.
Huh.
So I don't think that's it.
What do we do here? Delayed ejaculation is a little more of a, can we shock that?
No, we can't do that. So first of all, we have to explain where our orgasm really comes from. Everyone thinks it comes from the penis. It really comes from your brain.
Yeah.
So it's when you reach a certain threshold, when a man reaches a certain threshold in his brain, he releases all these neurotransmitters. That's a big word. I'm sorry. But things like dopamine, which give us that shiver down our spine. And I always try to explain this to guys. That's where an orgasm is. It's in the brain. It's not in the penis. And so there's a lot of things when we think of any kind of ejaculatory problems like that, we're always thinking what's going on in the brain. And so one of the things, and I would explore this a little bit more with him, is how much porn he does watch. Because there's this thing called porn-induced ED, but there's also a desensitization that happens with watching too much porn. So you can imagine if you're a guy and you watch porn and you watch your favorite genre, you could pick any genre, but it's like, you know, three women with big breasts and taking turns on you. And so that becomes your new threshold for reaching climax. And then you come back to your relationship where, you know, it's kind of normal sex. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure you guys experiment, but it's nothing like that, what you see in the movies.
Yeah. So, Amy, I would just have more, like, I think we just gave you a few ideas of what it could be, but I think in talking to him and kind of getting more history and saying, hey, like, I'm just curious, has this always happened? Can you tell me the history of this? I mean, if it is a learned response from his marriage, that's also possible. But what Dr. Cartman was also saying about this ability to think your way to orgasm and to kind of, like, learn to orgasm without ejaculation, is that weird? Which is a practice.
Yes. And it's true. It could be also a form of depression that's manifesting as delayed ejaculation, which is very possible. So depression and the treatment for depression both can cause delayed ejaculation. Yeah. But then it goes back to the point that I was making. It's in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Amy, I would just get clearer with him and start to talk to him. And there is some more information. We have information on our site about learning how to orgasm without ejaculation. We can get into that, but let's get some more history from this, and then call me back with him. Okay. Thanks, Amy. Let me know how it goes. The penis calls are lining up for you, Dr. Cartman. I'm here with Dr. Edward Cartman, healthy-mail.com, eCartman MD, 888-947-8277. Okay, let's talk to Ken 55 in New York. Hi, Ken. What's going on? How can we help you?
How you doing? Having trouble maintaining and getting an erection, and even after taking Cialis.
Okay, 55 in New York. All right, Ken. What? Okay, so even after taking Cialis, how long were you taking Cialis for?
As needed. I mean, it doesn't seem to work.
Did it ever work?
Not really, no.
Well, how are you taking it, first of all?
A pill.
Well, no. Are you taking it 20 minutes before sex, and then you sit there watching SportsCenter until something happens? Or do you take it on an empty stomach an hour and a half before intercourse, and then you go stimulate yourself? How do you take it?
It's, like an hour before. And, I haven't tracked exactly what I've done, waiting, but I'm not seeing results.
Well, it's very important. So Cialis is the one different one out of all the drugs that we use, like Viagra, Levitra, Stendra. Those are all quick acting, 30 minutes after you take it. If you take it on an empty stomach, they kick in. They only last for 4 hours, though. Cialis, or the generic name is Tadalafil, works a little differently, and it's been dubbed the weekender because a guy could take a pill on Friday, and potentially it can work all through, Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, and even maybe into Sunday morning, because it has a 24 to 36 hour duration of action. But you have to take that one an hour and a half before intercourse, and if you take it with food in your stomach, it'll take longer to absorb. So the most common, consultation I get for failed, the Viagra, I'll just use Viagra as a name, but any one of these drugs, they don't work on me anymore. The most common reason I find is that people just aren't using them correctly, and they're prescribed by their primary care doctor. Nowadays, you could even get them online without even a real consultation from a doctor who explains how to use them. And people just take them the wrong way. And so the first thing to do is make sure you're taking it the right way. You re-challenge yourself, and then you're in the right situation. So with Cialis, it's an hour and a half before sex, empty stomach, sexual stimulation after an hour and a half.
All right. Ken, you want to try it that way?
Yeah, I had tried crushing it, too. Would that help?
It can, but it won't make that big of an effect. Again, if you have a steak sitting in your stomach from dinner, and no matter whether you crush it, you take it whole, it's not going to get absorbed adequately.
Yeah. Okay, so Ken, I would take
one more. If there, what could be the problem physically if I was taking it correctly?
Okay, so let's talk about that. So first of all, real quickly, do you have any medical conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease?
No.
Okay, so you're otherwise completely healthy.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Okay, and is it more of a problem getting it up, or is it more of a problem keeping it up?
I'd say getting it.
Getting it up. Okay. So when guys say getting it up is a problem, to me, that sounds more of like an arterial problem. It means you can't get enough blood flow into your penis. Okay. And that could be due to the most common reasons would be a disease in your blood vessels, that things like heart disease. And erectile dysfunction is really now considered like a form of a manifestation of cardiovascular disease. And so I would recommend, if you haven't, get checked out by a cardiologist. In fact, I'll tell you an interesting anecdotal story. When Viagra came out in the late 90s, we started giving it out like candy as urologists, and we were rock stars. We had the first FDA-approved oral medication that actually worked, and people loved us. And we were giving it out, and guys were having great sex finally with a pill. And what we found out is that these same guys were coming back about 5 years later and telling us they had their first heart attack. And it wasn't that the Viagra was causing the heart attack, is that we weren't recognizing back then that these guys are really suffering from cardiovascular disease. And we were treating it as though, like, if a guy came in and said, "Hey, doc, my chest hurts when I exercise." And I say, "Okay, here's a Viagra pill."
Yeah.
That's not the right thing to do. You should go get checked out, get a cardiologist to check your blood vessels to see if there's anything wrong with them. And the ultimate thing to do is to get a penile ultrasound by somebody who knows how to do those and interpret them.
All right, Ken.
Okay.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Calling, Ken. Have a good night. Wow, that's a lot. It is, right? It could be from your heart. We don't get checked out. right? Often we're not getting the right kind of tests, correct?
Absolutely. And so in fact, you know, the guidelines have changed now that we're almost obligated to ask these guys these questions about their heart when they come in and say, hey, doc, I just have ED. Just write me a prescription for the pill. I'll be out of your office in no time. I'll let you go see the next patient. And I say, sure, I'll write you the prescription, but you got to do this for me. You got to go get your heart checked out. And so I work very closely with a lot of cardiologists because it's very important if you're dealing with sex, especially if you're dealing with erectile dysfunction, is to understand this relationship and make sure that these guys aren't coming in and you're just giving them a pill or a treatment and not recognizing the underlying problem that's going on.
Yeah, that sounds like that makes so much more sense. Holistic approach, not just giving a pill to solve it. Okay, we've got Rick, 46 in Ohio. Hey, Rick, you're on with Emily and Dr. Cartman. How can we help you?
Hi, Emily. Dr. Cartman. Hey, so I have a question about... I got a vasectomy about almost 10 years ago now.
Okay.
And ever since I got that vasectomy, my ejaculation is so different. I mean, it feels the same, but you know, I used to be able to spray everywhere. Now it just a little bit drizzles out. I was wondering, why is that? And is there anything I could do to get that back?
Love it, Rick. Thanks for the question. Okay, hold please. Okay, what do you think, Dr. Cartman?
Well, let me ask him, what was the interval between the vasectomy and you noticing this problem starting?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? I couldn't hear you.
How long was the time from when you had your vasectomy? How long of time went by after you had your vasectomy before you noticed this problem that you're, we'll call it the money shot?
Oh, right away.
Okay. So this requires a little physiology, so bear with me here, okay? So your ejaculation, most of it actually comes from your, no pun intended, but it comes from your prostate and your seminal vesicles, which are way downstream from where we do a vasectomy. And the only thing that the testes contribute to your money shot is the sperm, and that makes up about, by volume, only about by 5%. So most guys don't notice a change in their volume of ejaculate after they get a vasectomy, nor do they praise me when I reverse their vasectomy and say, oh my God, I got this huge load now that's coming out. We just don't hear that. Now, whenever you have a procedure done on your body, okay, you become more in tune to what's going on. And so sometimes it's just a question of like observation and being alerted to it. And I've had guys come in and tell me that in my office after I've done a vasectomy. And they said, well, it's barely anything comes out. And I said, well, let's check it out. And I have them do a semen analysis right there in my office. And I show them like the volume is really unchanged. You can't really perceive a change. So the vasectomy doesn't, like I said, doesn't take away more than 5% of your ejaculate volume if you get one done. So if you do notice a decrease in your ejaculate volume, you should be looking downstream at the prostate or the seminal vesicles. It could be a hormonal problem. Maybe your testosterone's low and you're just not producing as much fluid anymore because your testosterone's low, and that's what drives your prostate and your seminal vesicles.
Yeah, I wasn't. That makes sense. I was in my mid-30s when I did that. So I guess that'd be the time when, you know, you might start losing testosterone. I guess you'd start losing it in that time frame. And then I had one more follow-up question, if I may.
Sure.
I have a younger wife who's about, you know, 15 years younger than me, likes to have sex a lot. And I find... And I find that I usually take about a half of Viagra, like 80 milligram, just so it's nice and erect and I don't have any issues. Because when I don't take that, I can get an erection. It just isn't as firm and hard, and it doesn't stay and last as long. Mm. And I mean, I exercise. I would probably say I'm a little overweight, but I'm certainly not, you know, I mean, it's not out of control or anything. And so I was just wondering.
Rick, good question. What do you think, Dr. Cartman?
Well, so first of all, 80 milligrams of Viagra, that's almost the max dose. That's a pretty big dose.
Cuts an 80 now. Okay.
it works. And listen, I tell guys, as you get older, you're going to have some decrease in your rigidity. Now, it's not anywhere close to being classified as, say, ED, that you can't complete the sexual act and satisfy yourself and your partner. But you notice a little change as you get older. This is part of the aging process. I tell guys, look, these drugs are like performance-enhancing drugs, and it's kind of like, you know, the steroids that people use. Like Barry Bonds was a great baseball player before he took steroids, mm-hmm. and he became an exceptional baseball player when he started taking them.
Right.
So it's kind of like the way these drugs work. And yes, in a guy who's old, getting older, you're not old, okay? I'm way older than you, okay? But it can happen. You can start noticing some decrease in function. And so these drugs do help perk you up a little bit.
And we also don't know, Rick, if she's, I mean, she might be fine with your penis, where however it is, but you're thinking like it's got to be harder, it's got to be bigger, it's got to be all these things. And I'm going to bet that your wife is pretty satisfied as it is right now.
That's true. That's very true.
It's an ego thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, so, all right.
Okay.
Our work here is done with you, Rick. Thank you very much. All right. Dr. Cartman, you're going to hang out. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into your questions. You know those websites and apps you can use to fact check news stories or find out if like a used car was in an accident? Well, when it comes to sex toys, there are two resources you can trust to find products that are both safe and good. Sex with Emily and Good Vibrations. Good Vibrations is where I first learned about good sex toys, and they're still my go-to resource to check up on new products. They only sell the best toys, lubes, and more from the best brands, and like me, they test everything for you in advance. In fact, you probably heard my good friend Coyote on the show. She's in charge of deciding what they sell and what they don't. I call her the Surgeon General of Sex Toys. If she approves, you know it's good. Good Vibrations has beautiful shops all over the country, an amazing website, and they even power my online store, Shop with Emily. If you haven't checked out a Good Vibrations shop in person, you should. If there's not one nearby, go to sexwithemily.com/goodvibrations to see what I'm talking about. They carry all my favorite brands that I know will become your favorites too. So before you buy something as personal as a sex toy, check in with Good Vibrations. Just go to sexwithemily.com/goodvibrations. That's my site, sexwithemily.com/goodvibrations. Anything new penis issues that I don't know about?
You want to hear the yes. the weirdest requests I ever got?
Yes, please.
So I had a guy call me and ask me if I could split his penis into two.
Okay, you've got me. What?
So the penis actually has two chambers, the two corporal bodies. And it's just one of these fetishes or paraphilias that people have. And this is, I think we talked about this last time, and I said this to you, there's no way to train and prepare for this kind of stuff because I could not find that in a textbook anywhere. And I heard from one of my colleagues who does a lot of this stuff also. And he told me once a long time ago that he had a patient that actually asked him to do that and he did it. And when this guy called me, I said, oh my God, I wouldn't even know where to turn to. But thank God, I remember my buddies told me this story. And we were like, I think it was like just one of those conversations you have at a bar and you say, you'll never believe what I did. And I had to call him and ask him, how do you do this?
Where do you put the other, like I'm confused, like split it in half so it's like, is it staying on him or is he like, so it's two penises?
So you could have like two horns coming out.
And like double penetration?
I kind of thought maybe that's what it was about, but I think it would be, it's weird. And I don't want to say weird, but it's one of those.
Oh, it's, but we've got it up on the, yeah. Okay.
There we go.
Yeah. He's good with music and sound and graphics. Thanks, Brian.
Right. Okay, So you could, there's actually two chambers and, you know, theoretically you can split them in half and then you have two erectile bodies. And whether it's like, you know, like a forked penis, you want to call it, or like, you know, like a forked tongue, something like that. I don't know what you do with it, but, you know, people do things to their bodies and it's not a question of asking, you know, why. It's really a question of, you know, is it doable and is it safe? You know, you obviously don't want to do something that's going to hurt the guy and you want to make sure that he really knows what he's getting himself into when you do this. And I'm a big believer in, you know, your body, your choice.
Yeah.
You know, so
did you do the surgery on him? You did it?
He never followed through with it, but it was like one of those weird, super weird requests that I was like, oh my God, I was racking my brain. Like, what am I going to do?
I wouldn't want to do it. What if you regret it? I don't know. I
yes, that's the big thing.
Can't go back, can you?
Well, so my friend who did it, when I was talking to him, he told me that the person he did it on actually changed his mind, and then he put them back together.
Oh, God.
But it's not going to be the same.
Right.
It's not going to be the same.
No, right, exactly. Wow, Manny talks about penises as much as I do. It's so good to have you here, Dr. Cartman. You guys can call us with anything, any questions. Jim, 47 in Texas. Hi, Jim. What's going on? How can we help you?
Yeah, I'm just curious in regards to been experiencing in regards to fullness of erection, and curious if it's just typical with my age or something that's lacking with the partnership between myself and my wife.
Okay, so you mean like you're 47 years old and you're wondering, you're not able to get a full erection right now, and you're wondering maybe it's, is it because you're not into your wife anymore, you're not attracted to your wife, or is it because of your age? Is that your question?
Yeah, so 47, I've been, you know, super, super sexual, masturbate, you know, every day. We have sex probably, you know, 2 to 3 times a week.
Amazing.
But over the past month, I haven't been able to, you know, get fully erect, which I went to a doctor. They prescribed me the lowest dose of, you know, Viagra, which I've used a couple of times and, you know, it's incredible.
Right.
You know, wondering if it's because of, you know, the repetitiveness of, you know, the sexual act, the fact that, you know, my wife only does missionary because of some, you know, problems that she has, you know, with, you know, vaginally. And the fact that, you know, she's not into the chatter, or it's just, hey, I'm getting old and maybe I need.
Probably all those things, Jim. I think it's a little bit of everything. Likely.
Yeah. So Jim, this kind of happened in the last month. You went from hero, like hero to a lot less in the last month.
Yeah. It's like 50-50 that, you know, I'll be, you know, running out of skin or, you know, just kind of like 75% hard.
Okay. So when there's like an acute drop in your erection function or hardness, and you didn't just undergo a surgery which would cause that or start on some new drug that can cause that. Whenever I have a patient who just comes in and says, like, it just happened last month, the first questions I start asking them are about what's going on in your life. Because, you know, erectile dysfunction can occur in a 47-year-old. But it doesn't happen that rapidly. It can, but it's not common. Usually it's more of an insidious process that kind of sneaks up on you over time. And so, like, I would really ask you, and I would ask you to look at your life, your stress levels. Something we don't talk a lot about is the effect that stress has on our erection. So when we have this thing called a fight or flight response, and this is something you learn in like basic physiology, is like we were designed so when this saber-toothed tiger is chasing you, what you do is it's not a good time to have an erection or to have babies or do unnecessary things like that or digest food. You want to shunt all your blood to your muscles, to your heart. Your heart starts racing. Your blood pressure goes up. You shunt all your blood to your muscles because your objective is just to get away from the saber-toothed tiger. That's how we were designed. And, you know, fortunately in 2020, we don't have saber-toothed tigers anymore, but we still have stress. And stress does the same thing to you. It releases these same kind of chemicals in our body that cause our heart to race and our blood pressure to go up. And we kind of divert our blood flow from where we'd like it to be to where the body thinks it needs to be because it's under stress. So I would really look at what's going on overall in your life right now and work stress, even something like commuting stress, financial stress. Maybe the stress of your relationship with your wife is finally getting to you where, like you just said, it's like, I'm tired of just doing missionary.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, missionary. Like, talk to your wife about, you know, maybe trying what else she's into. Could she try other things? You know, a lot of times it's just, we get bored. That's okay. But we got to like mix it up. Have that conversation with your wife as well. Okay, Jim?
Gotcha.
Got it.
One other question is, if I continue to, you know, supplement with the Viagra, is there any long-term effects using the lowest dose?
We don't know of any long-term effects of taking these medications. I mean, we've taken them for many, many years. Like I said, Viagra came on the market in 1999, so it's been around for over 20 years. So I could tell you in 20-year, you know, experience that we haven't really seen any long-term effects of it. But who knows? Maybe after we take it for 40 years, mm-hmm. we might notice something. But no, there's nothing that we know of currently that Viagra can cause if you take it for a long period of time. And by the way, you haven't been taking it for a long period of time.
All right. Thanks, Jim. I'd say have a talk with your wife and work on the stress. That stress is the biggest killer of our sex drive, truly. We don't really relate. We don't really think about it for men and for women. Stressed out. It's hard to orgasm. We're like in our heads. We're... you know, thinking about everything else.
Well, you know, I practice in Silicon Valley, which is probably like one of the most stressful areas to live in.
Yeah. All those penises must be just, I'm sure. Okay. Well,
and we
stressed out penises.
I see young guys in their 20s coming in complaining of this stuff.
Wow.
In their 20s. And it's a real problem. It's a real problem. And they don't understand. And imagine if this is doing this to your penis, what's it doing to your blood pressure?
Wow.
What's it doing to your heart? You know, and again, think of your penis as a barometer of your health. Okay. It's like the canary in the coal mine. Okay. When that thing starts going bad, you got to think, okay, what changed? Especially if something abrupt happens, like what Jim's describing, you know, there's something that's changed in his life. If he called up and said, well, the last 20 years, I've been noticing it's slowly getting worse, worse, worse. I go, well, you've got garden variety ED.
Right. Okay.
But this is a drastic change in the last month makes me really suspicious that, you know, he has something like that going on. And this is a very common problem we see a lot of. And again, in Silicon Valley, young engineers.
You must be busy.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you tell a guy who's in his like late 20s, early 30s? You just like go to yoga, go meditate? How do you get him to like come off that? The stress, anxiety.
So it that's the hard thing. So it's like telling an obese person to lose weight or telling a smoker to quit smoking.
Exactly.
It's very easier said than done.
Of course.
And so these people usually are so happy because they finally achieved that dream job at like one of these big tech companies they've been wanting to have. They want to impress their bosses. They're living in Silicon Valley. It's super expensive. It's crowded. It's trafficy. It's all this stuff. They're away from their families. It's new environment. And, you know, what do you tell them? You tell them you have to find a way to disconnect. Now, you know, we could also talk about something that I think is
going
to... Well, you know, technology.
Yes, it's ruining our sex lives.
Yes.
And our lives. I agree.
Yes, because you remember when you and I were... I'm not dating us here, but when we were growing up, you know, your parents came home and they didn't get emails or phone calls or text messages about work. They disconnected.
It was done. Yeah.
And they relaxed in the evenings. They actually enjoyed, you know, whatever they did, watch the news, read the paper, spend time with the family. But now it seems like people don't disconnect. Don't disconnect. We keep going and going and going. And, you know, even if you don't answer that email from your boss because he decides to send it to you at 10 o'clock because he has a whim, and you happen to be like flipping through your phone, you're like, oh, let me look at this. It's not like, you know, he sends this thing for you that to do tomorrow.
Right.
Oh, you don't have to worry about it tonight. Just do this tomorrow.
Wait.
You start thinking about
exactly.
it. Exactly. So then you have a hard time focusing on your partner. You were going to have sex with your partner, but now you're thinking about, oh my God, this guy just made me do this. What am I going to do with this project? And so I try to tell patients that they really have to try hard to disconnect. So tech is, we're going to have in 20 years, we're going to have like we have now, you know, smoke-free zones, like, you know, like restaurants without smoking and all that kind of stuff. We're going to have like tech-free zones where there's going to be no Wi-Fi, no cell signal. People are going to go for retreats.
Leave your phone at home. I do that now. In September, I went away for a week. I like looked at my phone just like once or twice. It was such a great thing. I think we need it now. But you're right, in 20 years, I mean, hopefully we'll just start leaving the phones at home like we used to.
Yeah.
We couldn't bring them everywhere.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the other things, we could talk about this in California because it's legal here. One of the things that, you know, people could consider doing is using, you know, marijuana. And, you know, the way marijuana works is it works by binding to your pleasure receptors in your brain, these things called, we have these natural pleasure hormones are called endocannabinoids. And that's how we feel pleasure. And that's part of the, you know, an orgasm is we get that that feeling of, mm-hmm. of euphoria. And some people, if they can't disconnect themselves, you know, they can't break that cycle, you know, it's not a bad thing to try. And it's very hard as a physician, as a professional to recommend. It's like saying, have some wine, but then they get a DUI.
Right,
and then
exactly.
You get in trouble because they're like, oh, well, my doctor told me to start drinking.
Right.
But it's one of those things to consider, you know? It's like it's, if you can't de-stress, you know, if you can't disconnect.
Like, one, like maybe like, and it doesn't have to be, I think people picture like, you're going to have me smoke this bong, but like, honestly, it does, we're all fans here. You take like one hit or one vape, like you just, it really is a game changer for sex, for masturbation, to get you in the mood. You don't care about that work email as much. You're way more into sex and your orgasms can feel amazing. There, I just recommended it.
We should have recommended that to the previous caller who said that her boyfriend couldn't get an orgasm.
So you think if he was stoned, if he was a little high?
Try it.
A little high. He would. Great one. I wanted to cover a few things. Lately, this has been coming up a lot, and that's phimosis, having to do with foreskin. Can you kind of walk us through why now more than ever, where the foreskin can't be retracted?
Sure.
Okay.
So that's exactly what it is. Phimosis is a medical condition when a man can't retract his foreskin, or he can retract it, but it's tight, it's painful. And we have to remember that the penis is larger, girthier when it's erect. So even though he might be able to retract it in the flaccid state, if he can't retract it in the erect state, it's a problem. So you have to be very aware of that. And, you know, the primary treatment for that, you know, you could talk about using steroid creams and all that kind of stuff, which I found to be not so effective, is surgery, which is called circumcision, which, you know, a lot of men are routinely circumcised in this country at birth. But you go to other countries and they don't do it.
Right.
And yet we're this melting pot here in America now. We're seeing so many people coming here from other countries and they're uncircumcised and they have these problems. And, you know, I have guys coming into me, into my office, young guys, complaining of erectile dysfunction. And I ask them all these questions. And, you know, one of the questions I used to forget to ask, and I start asking this all the time now, is, do you have any pain when you have sex? And, you know, you never think of asking about pain, but obviously if you have pain, you can't maintain an erection. And I tell these guys, like, you think if you had a full erection and I punch in your kidney, you could maintain that erection?
Right.
No, you couldn't. So pain makes your erection go down. But when you have a phimotic foreskin and the car can't come out of the garage, as I say, it causes pain because when you're thrusting forward, the head is supposed to come out in a normal penis if it's uncircumcised.
Right.
And a lot of these guys, they convince themselves because during masturbation, it doesn't hurt. It's not a problem. And why doesn't it hurt when they masturbate? They masturbate in the forward direction, not the way you have sex. When you penetrate, you don't have control over your foreskin. The foreskin has to retract. And if it doesn't, it causes this pain at the tip. And then they come in complaining of erectile dysfunction. And I started picking it up on the physical exam. And I'm like, oh, doesn't this hurt? And some of these guys would still argue with me and say, no, it's fine. It's not a problem. I go, come on, it's got to hurt, man.
Right. You're like, So why is it happening? It's when as men are at a certain age, just for all the years of the foreskin being there, and then it just sort of over time starts to age, is it the way they are touching themselves? Like, why does it happen with some foreskins and not all foreskins?
So that part of the body requires a lot of hygiene. And I tell this to these guys, it's not a problem if you can maintain hygiene. So whenever you have skin on skin, and what other areas of the body we have skin on skin? We have armpits.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we have your groin creases, or if you're like overweight, you have a penis with folds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now imagine that. So you could imagine how dirty it gets in there. But imagine like you also peed through your armpit and you ejaculated through your armpit. And then if you didn't pull that thing back and clean it thoroughly multiple times throughout the day, it gets infected. And then when it gets infected, it develops scar tissue, and then that scar tissue is not elastic, and then it stops accommodating the when you pull it back.
Right. And sometimes you got to teach guys like to wash their sheets and do all these other things, and then it's like another thing. You got to wash your penis.
Yes.
Or use wipes like these Freshy wipes, which we love. Those would be great for cleaning the penis.
Yes.
Right? Just keep them in your bag, something. Interesting. I feel like we're hearing about that. You're helping so many penises right now. Are people who are friends with penises or have a penis in their life? What about, let's see, What about the circumcision? I feel like adult circumcision, people want to put the foreskin back on.
Yeah.
Do you forget people coming to you for that?
Yes, I do.
What do you do?
So we have this, and this is, again, thanks to the internet, we have this foreskin restoration movement that's going on in this country. Now, I don't want to make it sound like it's a huge movement or anything like that. And it was kind of interesting. So when we went to our last national meeting in Chicago, we had these protesters. So the AUA, which is our biggest national meeting, 10,000 urologists show up to this. It's an international meeting, actually. 10,000 urologists there. So they decided to protest circumcision in front of the convention hall. And I took a picture of these guys. There's three guys standing there with big signs in the middle of the day during the week.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, is this the movement here?
Right.
This is the movement here. So they had these signs up that said how horrible circumcision is on the baby, and it's like genital mutilation, and, you know, let the child choose themselves. And so obviously they're not happy with their circumcision or whatever, but this is a very, very small percentage of people who want to restore their foreskin. So how do they do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is, you could actually take the shaft skin of your penis and stretch it out over the head and actually use like a device, like a clamping device that will keep it over the head of the penis. And over time, it'll stretch out. In fact, this is historical. So during World War II, this is how the Nazis would identify the Jews, is by they were circumcised. And so there's, and I forget the movie that it was, but there was a movie about this. It was like either The Diary of Anne Frank or something like that. They talked about this, where these kids would literally do this, is that the young Jewish kids would do this, stretch out their foreskin.
Because that's how they would know. Wow.
This has been practiced, you know, but that was done for life-saving measures because, you know, you would be put in a concentration camp if you were identified. But nowadays it's done for more for pleasure, for... some people are saying that an uncircumcised penis is more sensitive. And that is a true statement, but it's not true that if you're circumcised, you don't enjoy sex.
Right.
The opposite, you know. So
yeah, exactly. And how would you, like, it's like this FOMO, fear of missing your foreskin, I guess. You want to put it back on, but how's sex right now? Like, it,
correct.
Live with what you have, right? Because it seems like it could be dangerous, or it could just, to attach it again, not dangerous, but like, well, couldn't you fuck something up that way too? Like, couldn't that, not you, if you were doing it, but I don't know.
You could, yes, you can. People can mess things up, definitely. Yeah. But it's just one of those things that, you know, I guess the people who are doing this are people who are circumcised at birth, so they've never experienced, you know, sex both ways. And I guess the best thing to do, and I don't know of any study that exists of taking men who were uncircumcised and had a sexual life and then got circumcised and doing like a study on them to say, like, what do you feel? What is the difference in you know, sexual pleasure?
Wow.
And in this country, because we circumcise so many men, boys at birth, we definitely are not an asexual country. We're not suffering from sexual dysfunction
because
more
of
than,
our circum- right.
more than any other country that, you know, routinely doesn't circumcise.
Right. No. Okay. Good point. It just keeps coming up. People are like, save the foreskin, do all the things. And I just feel like we've got so many other things to work on. Work on your stress levels, your anxiety. I don't think you need to obsess about your foreskin.
No.
Whether you have it or not. But clean it. Clean your foreskin.
Hygiene is important.
So important. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Especially, yeah. If you're with someone with the paint, like, make sure it's clean, because that's how we can get infections and stuff.
Yes.
All right. We just have a few more minutes. So what else, Dr. Cartman? I mean, we have calls, but we just... I mean, Jeff has been on hold for a while. He's 58. Jeff, we only have like a minute, though. I know you have a question about ED, but I guess we haven't answered it. Jeff, 58 in Washington.
Yeah, I got MS, and I've taken pills. I've done Cialis and Viagra, kind of the way you said. None of those are really working. It's kind of started up in the last probably 5 years or so. So it's been going on a lot. I'll just ask quick, is the electroshock that you were talking about, is that the same as a Gaines wave, or is it something? And would my urologist know about it up here in Washington?
Great. Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
So Gaines wave is just one brand of shockwave therapy. And in fact, what you want to ask your doctor is the type of energy they use. So you want to make sure it is unfocused pulse therapy and not radial frequency. Okay. So that's the question you want to ask your doctor if you're going to do some kind of shockwave therapy for your penis, because that's where most of the research is on. But these radial frequency machines and devices and companies are kind of trying to piggyback on the data that's coming out from the unfocused pulse therapy. So that's really what you want to ask your doctor.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. All right. In Business with Emily, find me Monday through Friday on SiriusXM Radio. It is 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific on channel Stars 109. You can get a 30-day trial at sexwithemily.com/SXM. And finally, rate us, review us, tell us you love us. Wherever you listen, all the podcast platforms right now, how are you listening? Just look at that app and give us stars, write a review. Appreciate that. On iTunes, it really helps. Helps everywhere. So thank you all for supporting the show. And thank you to my incredible team. I appreciate you and all your hard work. Ken, Kristen, Elisa, Brian, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me feedback@sexwithemily.com.
Do you ever meet someone who hasn't tried your favorite food or watched your favorite TV show, and then you get them to try it and their mind is blown? That happens to me all the time, but with lube. Specifically, lube during oral sex. It's one of my favorite tips, and I'm always amazed when I find someone who hasn't tried it. Either they don't think it's needed, or they're afraid of lube tasting bad. Well, thank goodness they're wrong. I mean, not only does lube make receiving oral sex feel incredible, but now it also tastes amazing. There's a brand new line of flavored lubes from our good friends at Joe. It's called Muse, and it's going to be that mind-blowing thing that will change your sex life forever. And if you haven't heard, my other favorite tip for giving oral is to be enthusiastic. Well, guess what? When your partner tastes like salted caramel, believe me, that enthusiasm gets real. Muse comes in three great flavors: mint chocolate, creme brulee, and yes, salted caramel. Each one is 100% edible, 100% sugar and paraben-free, and 100% game-changer. Oh, and they come in bottles with pump tops. It's like my dream come true. You gotta try Muse. We're all obsessed with it over here. To get some for yourself, go to sexwithemily.com/muse. That's my site, sexwithemily.com/MUSE.